The latest nursing news and information brought to you by the Johnson & Johnson Campaign for Nursing's Future. This is Nursing Notes Live. Nursing Notes Live is an audio extension of the national award-winning monthly e-newsletter, Nursing Notes, which offers the latest industry news, trends, and updates in nursing. You can subscribe to the e-newsletter at www.discovernursing.com. Each month's Nursing Notes issue will be accompanied by a couple of episodes of Nursing Notes Live, which will expand on the content and provide you greater insights into the topics presented in the e-newsletter. You can listen to previous podcasts on the Nursing Notes by Johnson & Johnson Facebook page or nursingnoteslive.com, or visit iTunes to subscribe to the podcast. Also, check out the campaign's latest initiative, Thank a Nurse, which includes a new mobile app game called Happy Nurse, available in the App Store and online at www.discovernursing.com, and The Art of Nursing, a portrait of thanks mosaic project that invites nurses from around the world to submit photos online to be in part of a historical image. Submit your photo at www.campaignfornursing.com. I'm your host, Jamie Davis. In this month's episode, Nursing Notes Live will be discussing holistic care and the unwavering compassion and commitment by nurses in the field of hospice and palliative care nursing. I got the chance to talk with this month's featured get-to-know nurse, Pamela Johnson. Pamela is a certified hospice and palliative care nurse and director of clinical services at Odyssey Hospice in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I asked her about what drew her to a nursing career focusing on end-of-life care.
Basically, I decided, I think in junior high school, to volunteer at a community hospital that wasn't far from my home. And I did that once or twice a week, and I went all over the hospital. I was in the pharmacy, and then I got to go up in the nursing units and watch the care that nurses gave and help in little ways, but not that much. But I really enjoyed watching the interactions between patients and the nurses, and thought I could do this, and I thought I could really make a difference. And that experience shaped my drive, I guess, to be a nurse. My parents really wanted me to go to college, and I was, no, I want to go to nursing school. I want to go out there and do it as soon as possible. And I did go to nursing school and did that 2.5-year program and graduated and went right to a med-surg unit and did that for about 6 months. And then I went to the emergency room, and I was really kind of driven to do all that high-tech stuff in the emergency room. Did helicopter service for a little bit, worked in a trauma unit for some time too, and then ended up in critical care. And I watched the way patients died without their families and with little support, and nobody really talked about what exactly was going on with that patient or the family. And I just didn't think that was the right way for things to happen. And as it turned out, I was newly married, and my husband had a heart attack, and they ended up giving me all the young patients that had MIs, especially the young guys, and talking to their wives about how to deal with somebody young that's having a heart attack. And some of those patients would die. And I just was having a hard time with it and decided that I thought it was time for me to go into something different. So I started to do home care. And that's when hospice was first talked about. And I got to go along with a nurse who was seeing a hospice patient. And I thought, this is it. This is really what I'm supposed to do.
It's funny how you fall into, you were involved in such a broad range of nursing care, really looking for that niche that fits you. And it's
exactly
funny. You get to that one thing, and it's amazing how it clicks.
It did. It did for me.
What's one of the things that you find most gratifying? I think a lot of people look at hospice care and they just, all they can see is death and dying. But there's really so much more to hospice care. I think, first of all, that it's care.
It is care, and I think that, I didn't make this bad situation that this patient or this family find themselves in. I didn't make the cancer or you know, whatever that problem is that that patient and family are experiencing, that I can make that situation a little bit better and I can help them figure out what their goals are, because it really isn't about me so much as it's about them and what they want. And talk about quality of life. And a lot of times people haven't been talking about quality of life. And so when you can help them, and it's not just me, I don't want to say that, it's the team. You know, it's working with a chaplain, it's working with the social worker, it's working with the home health aide that helps with that person's personal care. You know, maybe if they could get their care done a little bit earlier in the morning, they have more energy later in the day. It's the simple things sometimes.
Isn't that what nursing care is all about? Those simple little interventions that a nurse identifies that really improves the patient's maximum level of health at that time. And that may be not very much, but any improvement is a great improvement.
Well, sometimes it's even about how to schedule the medications. You know, that person hasn't been able to sleep well, or maybe they're sleeping too much, and we can, but they, you know, they want good pain control, and they thought that both had to go together. You know, and those are the kind of questions that a good hospice nurse is really going to delve into.
Well, Pam, we're going to be moving into a whole panel discussion with some other hospice nurses on these topics. But if you were to encourage someone, or someone were to come to you and say, I'm really thinking about getting into hospice care as a nurse, what advice might you give them to help them move down that path and get their questions answered?
There's probably a couple ways. One is to shadow, you know, ask that hospice, go to a hospice agency and ask if you can shadow just to see what they do. Or to volunteer, and there's so many great opportunities for volunteers, just to sit with somebody who might be dying, or maybe just to be there for that person's family. You can kind of see what all the team members do in that situation. You know, we have patients at homes and nursing homes and assisted living facilities, sometimes even at hospitals, and they all could use volunteer support.
Now I'd like to continue our conversation with Pamela and introduce additional hospice and palliative care nurses to talk about key issues surrounding the specialty. Joining us for a panel discussion are Betty Farrell, a certified registered nurse and principal investigator of the End of Life Nursing Education Consortium, known as ELNEC, and Todd Holtman, an ACHPN and president of the Hospice and Palliative Nurses Association in Boston, Massachusetts. I'm excited, as always, every month to have a different featured topic here on Nursing Notes Live. But this particular topic of hospice care and palliative care is near and dear to my heart. My family has been involved in hospice program and in the community, not even as medical professionals, but just as family members interested in this project and program since the mid-70s. And so I have had personal experience as a child and young adult with death and dying of a family member through hospice care, and really am very, very positive about that experience in my life. Betty, tell us a little bit about what brought you into hospice care. Why did you decide that this was the career path for you as a nurse?
Sure. I began my career in nursing 34 years ago in 1977. And my first entree into nursing was working as a nurse on an inpatient oncology unit. And it was at a time when even oncology was very new and the word hospice had barely been heard. I worked for about 3 years in the inpatient oncology unit and was immediately drawn to our patients that had very advanced disease and those who were dying. And I was so intrigued by how they possibly could be managing their symptoms and problems at home when they were so ill in the hospital. So I left the hospital and went to work in home care because there was no hospice program in the entire state where I was living. And so I had the opportunity in 1980 to be involved with starting the first hospice program. And it was at a time where people still couldn't even pronounce the word. When you would say, you know, you were starting a hospice program, people would say, hospice, or, you know, where is it? So it's really been remarkable over the 34 years to see this thing that people had never heard of or thought only happened across the ocean in, you know, at St. Christopher's in the UK, has now become something that our public expects and that nurses have really led the way in creating this amazing system of care for patients and families.
You know, Todd, I know that it's one of those things. I think people sometimes think hospice care is really all about death and dying, but there's really so much more to providing that real life solutions.
Right. I actually have to agree with that. And I was sitting here smiling as I listened to Betty talk about her entree into the field, and I appreciated hearing that. I think, to me, one of the things when I first went into hospice, and I came into hospice, I actually had worked as an oncology nurse, and when they would be doing the floor assignments, I was the one who was always saying, oh, I'll take that patient, I'll take that patient, and I felt myself drawn to caring for patients who were, you know, experiencing sort of the advanced stages of their disease or approaching end of life in terms of their cancer. And arguably, the reason what drew me to it is I felt that I was able to engage in the kind of nursing care that I thought I would be doing when I went to nursing school, that I was able to help people experience sort of hope and joy in their lives, and for them to, you know, to sort of work on helping them maximize their quality of life. That, you know, as nurse, you know, when you're in nursing school, you hear about how part of our role is to promote patient autonomy and optimize their functional status. And that was certainly part of it. But I felt that this was a chance to engage in the sort of holistic nursing that I was really drawn to when I first went to school, that it was sort of promoting comfort in body, mind, and spirit, and really allowing them to enjoy themselves for whatever time they had left. And that that was really central to my experience, and that was what convinced me that as much as I enjoyed oncology nursing, that perhaps I was really destined to enter into hospice.
And Pam, earlier you mentioned something about that it's a team approach, which I guess I hadn't really thought about, because we think of team approaches to patient care really being a hospital thing. But there's so many other important parts to the healthcare team, especially in a home setting, including in end-of-life care with people like a chaplain, so that you can bring in all of those various portions of a patient's aspect, their psychosocial and their spiritual and everything else.
I agree. I think that to help the patient see that we're here to help them achieve their goals, you know, that we're asking them to prioritize what's important to them. And sometimes it's one of the best nursing qualities that a hospice nurse has is the ability to pull and to use the team effectively to help that patient reach those goals. So it might mean, you know, she's worked really hard on getting that patient's pain under control, but she's like, I think there's something else, and that a chaplain support would really help this patient. Or, you know, maybe we can try some Reiki therapy, or, you know, I can pull in a therapist for that, or maybe I can try, you know, the social worker really needs to talk to this wife a little bit more. I've talked with her some, of course, but working together as a team, that's when things really get good.
What's one of the biggest issues, Pam? I'll start with you, but I urge Betty and Todd just jump in. What is one of the biggest issues right now, the biggest challenges from your standpoint in providing the best care you can for your patients?
I think the first roadblock for us is the fact that the word hospice scares so many people. If we could, I sometimes think it'd be easier if we had a different word, because there are some people that don't understand what hospice is, and they're so afraid of the word that they don't even listen to what you get with hospice, what the team can provide. You know, I think sometimes if we explained all the benefits first and then tell them at the end of the discussion that this is what hospice is, we get more positive responses. Would you guys agree?
Yeah, I would agree. I think part of it is getting back to the point, Jamie, that you made earlier, that so much of what we do is in the service of living, both for the patient and for their family. And people, I think a lot of times we hear the word hospice and they have these almost reflexive thoughts in their head of death and dying or withdrawing medical treatment or medical care, that it's perceived very negatively. And you're right, I agree with what Pam's saying, that people, I think when they do learn about it, oftentimes people say, wow, I wish I had known about this sooner, or I wish I'd started this earlier.
And it's funny because I've heard some people say, well, hospice care is just for the, you know, that final 6 weeks of life, which, of course, you know, goes down the whole path of what you were just talking about. But really, there's so much that hospice can do for that patient that is terminal, but 6 months or even 12 months out from the, you know, their end of life. There's so much that they can do and achieve and live in a full life in that time frame. That is there any initiative to try to expand the scope of hospice's reach, or is it already expanded and I'm just not aware of it?
There actually has been enormous energy over the last decade in extending the good work of hospice into other settings of care and much earlier in the course of illness. So the National Consensus Project for Quality Palliative Care was an effort pulling together each of the leading palliative care organizations, the American Academy of Hospice and Palliative Medicine, the Center to Advance Palliative Care, Hospice and Palliative Nurses Association, and the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization, all came together and created national guidelines for palliative care. And what those guidelines do is to really emphasize that hospice is one element of palliative care. It is the system of care focused on the last phase of life, generally the last 6 months of life, but that palliative care, care that is focused on quality of life and symptom management and enhancing life during serious illness, is care that should be implemented at the time of diagnosis. And so, again, just as we've seen the growth of hospice in the country, we now are seeing the integration of palliative care in oncology care, cardiac care, renal disease, and stage pulmonary disease, so that at the time someone is diagnosed with a serious illness, we need to immediately begin to integrate good symptom management, interdisciplinary care, support for families, all of the elements of palliative care. And then if we do that, if we're really integrating palliative care as a philosophy throughout serious illness, it will also make for a much smoother and earlier transition into hospice as a delivery system when the patient is in the final months of life. But there is now an enormous movement with the majority of hospitals in the country now in some way including palliative care, developing palliative care services. So palliative care applies across settings and across diseases and from the time of diagnosis.
Right. I would like to add, and I appreciate Betty's response, and in truth, while I have worked as a home hospice nurse, when I completed my master's degree, I took a position as a palliative care nurse practitioner, and so I see myself as being in the field of palliative care and contributing to hospice. And I would also highlight, last fall, there was a study that was released in the New England Journal of Medicine that looked at the impact of palliative care, where they demonstrated that, in this case, for patients with lung cancer, that they had significantly less symptom burden, that they had greater patient satisfaction, and that they actually lived longer when they received palliative care and when they were able to not only have their symptoms relieved, their physical symptoms relieved, but they were also in a position to be able to talk through all these important medical decisions. When you think about it, all of us, when we're faced with important life decisions, oftentimes we'll reach out to experts or trusted others to help us make these decisions. That's part of what palliative care does. And I would also argue that, again, this year, those nice folks at the Gallup poll have demonstrated that nurses remain the most trusted professionals to the general public, and that nurses are extremely well positioned not only to have the kind of trusting relationships that assure that patients' needs are being met, but also to help support some of these discussions as people look at how to plan for their futures and, you know, what options they want to pursue in terms of managing their treatment.
Something occurred to me, this thought that, you know, why is it that in patients that are diagnosed with a terminal or very severe illness, that this penchant for the acute medicine setting to, heck, treat our patients to death. I loved how you pointed out that patients with palliative care lived longer with a terminal illness. How do you build a balance between an appropriate treatment program that may prolong life versus palliative care that builds quality of life? And then the conflict that occurs between two different medical or healthcare-related goals.
Well, I think in many ways, you know, we are to blame for this kind of system that we've created, because what has happened over the last 50 years is the U.S. healthcare system has focused on cure, on prevention of disease, on a belief that our medical system is infallible and that for every disease or problem that humans can have, that there's a solution to it. And so therefore, you know, we constantly see patients coming in the hospital and families saying, but gee, you know, grandma's only 92 and everybody in our family lives to be 100. Or, you know, the chronically ill person with heart disease comes to the ER and the family says, but, you know, you always pull her through. The doctors are wonderful here. Oh, the nurses were great last time she was here. So people have come to believe that, you know, death is avoidable, that that every problem can be successfully treated. And it's, you know, a normal human response. We want to live. We want our loved ones to live. And yet we now have gone full spectrum from, you know, early part of our history where people died of diseases early in life, where most diseases were not treatable, that all that could be done was attention to their comfort. And then over 50 years, we made this system where it seems like death is avoidable. So with the current constraints on our healthcare system, we are having to realistically face the limits of what can be provided, both in terms of when care that is aggressive and disease-focused no longer serves the patient well, but also when it simply will be futile. And these are very, very difficult things, because everybody wants, you know, 92-year-old grandma to live a little longer, and everyone wants to be cured of their liver failure or pancreatic disease or, you know, their end-stage heart disease. So these are huge social issues, but nurses play a vital role in helping patients and families understand treatment options. Nurses are vital in helping patients and families articulate their values and their needs. Nurses are translators. They take information that's been delivered from physicians and others and make it understandable to patients and families so they can make best choices. But all of this is enormously complex and is really a reflection of society. But fortunately, nurses are in every system of care and are closest to patients and families.
I think a very good example of that would be like the automatic defibrillator, and the fact that, you know, patients have these devices implanted, but nobody ever says at what point do you want to not have this, to turn it off. And we don't talk about that when we put it in.
Why do we avoid that discussion? I guess nobody likes to talk about death and dying, but it is a part of the process. And it's not something anyone looks forward to, but if it's closer in the picture because of a given health problem, it should be discussed rather than avoided.
Yeah, I think nurses, though, we have the ability to do so much, and yet we don't pause to say, should it be done? It is the natural human inclination to want to survive. And I think another thing that we often fail to remember as nurses is we have seen 100 deaths or we have seen 1,000 deaths. But for this patient and family in front of us, perhaps this is the first time they have been asked to make these decisions. Perhaps this is the first time that this, you know, loving, wonderful granddaughter has seen someone she loved die. And so it is, of course, natural, expected that family members will want, you know, do everything, you know, make grandma live longer. I don't want to talk about death. You know, I want to talk about her getting better. We should never assume that these conversations will be easy. We shall never assume that patients and families want to talk about these issues. But we do know as nurses what the consequences are of avoiding these conversations, that people find themselves amidst care that really violates their basic values, and that patients become in situations where care that has been implemented now, it needs to be discontinued, and that's very difficult. So I think we need to realize this is exactly as we would expect that it would be in terms of public perception. This is not, we're not going to change this culture easily. But hopefully we are creating history. You know, just as when I was a new nurse, no one could even say the word hospice. Now, every time I'm, you know, talking with someone in my community or sitting on the airplane next to someone or in a grocery store line, and someone says, "What do you do?" The response now is, "Oh, hospice, that's wonderful." Everybody has a positive story. You know, my grandfather was in hospice, my neighbor, my husband, and people now have lived a history where they see what hospice can provide. And that is really the best that we can do, is to create a history where our public has seen the benefits of hospice and palliative care, and they understand that it doesn't mean failure. They understand that their ultimate goals of what is best, you know, for those they love includes good palliative care and hospice. So we're amidst history. We're in this journey, and it's we have done an enormous amount. Much of what has happened in the last 30 years has happened because of nurses, and we should be very proud of that. But we have a tremendous amount to do, and we have to do it. The burdens of society and the aging population, the financial burdens on our healthcare systems, we must do this work.
I think in large part, and this is speaking very grossly, that the metric of success in medicine is either cure of disease or sort of substantial, significant modification of disease. And that becomes the benchmark against which to compare anything that's being done. And as long as that's the case, I think that that's also going to be driving some of the communication that you were mentioning earlier, the sort of style of communication, such as the example of the implanted cardioverter defibrillator, that people are told, oh, if we put this in, here is what it will achieve. This will correct your or modify your heart failure so that you can continue to live, and it will prevent, you know, this fatal arrhythmia from ensuing. And you're right, we don't have these discussions that say, here's how it's going to impact your life. You know, that this is what it's going to feel like when it goes on. And under these conditions, it's going to go on, it's going to become activated a lot, and you may want to discontinue it. And I think that those conversations, at some level, are experienced as measures of not success or measures of failure. And I think that that also is part of what I personally would like to see change in the culture, that the success is when we're able to match what the patient would like to see happen in terms of their goals with a viable plan of care, that that the patient really is able to drive this and say, you know, I don't like that scary kicked in the chest feeling when my ICD goes off, and I know that I have heart failure, and I know that this is not reversible, that this is the sort of culture that my own personal hope I would like to see evolve.
There are a lot of nurses out there that may not specifically become hospice nurses or go into the palliative care setting specifically, but because they are working with patients that are dealing with these issues or looking at having to soon deal with end-of-life issues, what is a good way for every nurse to find resources or be open to helping guide patients in that direction when it's appropriate?
You're right, that there is sort of palliative nursing that occurs in across all settings, including emergency departments and intensive care units and primary care clinics. And again, these are places where you find nurses who have trusted relationships with patients and families. They're opportunities for learning, not coincidentally, is the LNEC curriculum that Betty Farrell had started. LNEC is End-of-Life Nursing Education Consortium, and Betty, you'd be a better person to comment on that. And then also, Betty mentioned earlier, the Hospice and Palliative Nurses Association. This is the membership society for nurses who are providing palliative nursing to patients facing any sort of serious illness in their life, or families who are facing serious illness in a loved one. And HPNA can be found at hpna.org online. And they also have a number of resources, both printed materials and online e-learning opportunities and teleconferences. They also twice annually have conferences that nurses can attend, one of which is interdisciplinary, that allow folks to develop skill sets that would meet the demands of their patients in the setting that they're working at.
They also have a great core curriculum, too, for certification for hospice and palliative care as well.
Correct.
And that's something that, you know, for those that want to become certified in hospice and palliative care, that's an opportunity for that. But I like that there is an interdisciplinary conference and an approach. And I've seen this across the nursing professional organizations. It's really been exciting to see how all of these organizations have really opened up their resources to nurses in every discipline, because we just interact with patients across so many aspects of their lives. I just want to thank all three of you for joining me. This has been a great discussion. Heck, I suspect, I don't know about you, but I could probably sit here and we could talk about this for another half an hour, but we need to wrap up the show. Could somebody just give me the website address if somebody's listening to this and they wanted to go and check it out online?
Yeah, www.hpna.org. And Pam had mentioned certification. You can also become certified as a hospice and palliative nurse, and that is run by a separate organization, the National Board for Certification of Hospice and Palliative Nurses. That website is www.nbchpn.org.
Don't forget to check out the entire June 2011 issue of Nursing Notes, focusing on hospice and palliative nursing care. This month's Nursing Notes newsletter includes articles on the similarities and differences between hospice and palliative care, the beauty and benefits of working in both practices, and also a quick look at nursing faculty programs and awards. You can read the entire issue online at www.discovernursing.com. And don't forget to catch our special Nursing Notes Live episode this month, featuring the Johnson & Johnson Urban Zen Integrative Therapy Program Nurse Scholarship winners. You'll find this and our other podcast episodes at www.nursingnoteslive.com and the Nursing Notes Johnson & Johnson Facebook page and in the podcast area in iTunes. Nursing Notes Live is produced each month for the Johnson & Johnson Campaign for Nursing Future by Medic Cast Productions. All rights reserved.